I'm Dan.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is the Money Basics Podcast.
Welcome back, Money Basics Podcast, episode 12.
12.
12?
12. Where?
12.
We're, our viewership has been accelerating rapidly, somewhat recently. I haven't been following it day to day that much, but you told me what the total was today, and I was kind of surprised by that.
722 listens.
Which is pretty sweet, considering we're just, you know, screwing around, having fun, having these chats that we pretty much have anyways, and just recording them, right? So that's pretty cool that there's such an interest, and really appreciate all the listens and those who are sharing it. And it's kind of funny, some of the people that sometimes approach us or reach out to us and say that they listen, that I wouldn't really expect that from, right? Which is really cool. So yeah, episode 12. Today's episode, we normally make like a big long script, a huge document about like, okay, this is what we want to cover and we want to hit this point, this point, this point. Today we kind of switched it up a little bit because, well, a couple of reasons. We both had crazy weeks, super busy, haven't had a lot of time to prepare. But we also thought usually we make these huge scripts and we only get about halfway through them because we get on tangents talking about stuff and, you know, one thing leads down a certain rabbit hole, leads to another. And we don't end up completing the script. So we're going to try a little more off the cuff today. We've got a slight outline, but not as laid out as normal. And we want to talk about a couple of topics today. So instead of laying it out, let's just start and then people can be surprised by whatever comes up.
Yeah. And we might surprise ourselves because you just got me thinking about something. So you mentioned that you don't really check the stats all that often. I check it multiple times a day. It's on like my favorites apps. Like I have like a little side floating bar, they call it. And, I click on it like all the time. It's one of my like routines.
So this is like what we're different personality types a bit. And I mentioned this like with the whole Blossom thing, where like I don't do the social media stuff well, and I think that translates into like this kind of stuff. I kind of latch onto things. I don't know. I have a bit of a, I guess, an addictive personality with some of these things or whatever, and I'll get wrapped up, consumed by it, and you know, it can actually take up a lot of time in my day that I just don't have, and it's for me, it's just not worth it, and I have a difficult time like controlling the urge to check every 5 minutes. So I just don't even engage in that. The same with social media. Like I don't have Instagram for that reason, because I just don't want to be glued to it, because I have a very hard time just hitting the off switch, right?
Yeah. I mean, and on that subject, I developed a couple strategies. I remember way back, like Facebook and Instagram and all these things were consuming a lot of my time because I had notifications on, all that kind of stuff. And what triggered me to change that was I watched that The Social Dilemma on Netflix, and it like,
oh, yeah, that was a good one.
I was like, oh man. So anyway, I went through my entire phone, just shut off notifications to everything.
Yeah, I actually run my phone on silent all the time.
Most of the time I do as well.
For those of my friends that listen to this and you're wondering why you call me and I never answer, it's because I literally don't even know the phone's ringing.
Yeah.
And that's partially for that reason. I don't want notifications and stuff. I have most of my notifications turned off. But it even goes beyond that. The other part is that I think I'm a little bit crazy, or something's twisted in my head or whatever. I just get unreasonably annoyed by phone, like the phone vying for my attention. That like bothers me, and I don't know why. Maybe I should go talk to a shrink about it or something. But
you say that, but Snapchat made me very angry. I had notifications turned off for Snapchat, and they started sending me text messages.
Oof.
Oh, I deleted it. I was like, that's it. I'm like, I told you to stop bothering me.
I value my ability to focus, and I value like where I put my attention. I try to be intentional with it. And I think I've got a pretty good thing going here. And sometimes it's at the expense of not getting around to people right away. But at the same time, people shouldn't expect that. Like, go back into like the 1990s. It was never expected that you would be available like at the drop of a hat every single second of every single day, you know? So I'm trying to sort of replicate that in our modern lives here, where it's like, I'll get back to you, but like it shouldn't be the expectation that I'll just, at any moment you can just call me and I'll be ready to give you my attention. Like, not to be a jerk about it or anything, but like there's a lot of things going on in everyone's lives, and sometimes I'm just busy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know, I run social media a little bit more. And
that's why you do.
Yeah.
Well, you're better at that.
I mean, like, personally, I'm just on a little bit
more. I thought you meant for the money basis.
Also for the business, too. Yeah. So, but speaking of that Blossom app, so it's a newer investing app. I don't even think it's been out for a year yet, that I've actually really enjoyed being on. It's been a pretty cool community. There's obviously been some, things that have come up on there for me, but it's cool. As you guys should check it out. We're going to link it with my referral link on there. The nice thing about this app is that it's well, actually, they pay you to join if you use a referral code. So if you use my referral code, we each get $5.
Yeah, and there's like little courses or whatever, like not really courses. There's like advertisers. They make you do like a little quiz, and they pay you to do it.
Yeah,
it pops up. Like I think I've made like 10 or 15 bucks from that site, which
and,
is kind of cool.
With my referrals and doing those educations, I've made up almost 50 bucks.
Wow.
Yeah, so they keep popping them up. But it's an investing beginner. Well, there's a range of folks on there from experienced
beginners,
to beginners. But the purpose is to be a friendly social media avenue for people to join that want to learn about investing and get more into it. And it's Canadian based, which is cool.
Yeah. The Canadian base for me is like the main selling feature. I use Twitter mostly for all my investing, like news needs, I guess. But the problem is, it's very difficult, I find, to filter the Canadian stuff because I don't invest a whole lot in the American stuff. I do, but just through ETFs. So it's just like, whatever, I don't really care. But I'm more concerned about the Canadian stuff, and it's very difficult to filter. While Blossom, it's Canadian, right? So, I mean, they will talk about American stocks here and there, but the majority of the conversation. You frequently find a lot of Canadian names there.
Yeah, there's some good characters on there. People share market news and different updates. The actual Blossom, like group workers, people that run it, actually throw out daily news and weekly updates on sort of the high traffic sort of news movers in the market.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool too. On a positive note, I created my own account and I linked the Money Basics like in my description. So it's like, but I'm there under my own name. I've got 93 followers now. So just by sharing all the Money Basics stuff.
Yeah,
so
it's kind of been a few months actually. You say it's been out for a year, but it hasn't been a year.
It was out. I think it's been 6 months. I don't know it was 3 or 4 months before I joined.
Yeah.
And then I joined cause one of my favorite YouTuber guys, sort of put a video out, said that he was one of the partners or something to do with a partnership and he was throwing it out there. So
yeah.
I checked it out and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I'll wholeheartedly admit that I only joined originally because I was like, this is a great place to promote our stuff. And I had some people kind of sort of call me out on it. But then after using the app for a couple of days, I actually really enjoyed the app personally as well. So, Anyway, it's just a good avenue to find some new investors and throw out some feedback on there for the business, but also just personally for myself to learn some stuff from some people that are on there a little more experienced too. Anyway, it's been good. So then on that subject, checking the Anchor, our podcast numbers,
mm-hmm.
One of our highest viewed or listened to episode is the Managing Money episode.
Personal Finances one?
Episode 3, I think it is.
Okay,
and it's
yeah,
titled
yeah.
Managing Money. So we basically talk about like debt and go through budgeting and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really interesting. And it sort of ties in with a few conversations I had in the last week with some random people. Both of those people that I talked to that I can remember explicitly telling me that they don't really plan their finances at all. The one person I was talking to, their income was average, and the other person I talked to, I would imagine their income is probably pretty high. So it ties into what we've been saying, right? Like people, it doesn't matter what your income is, people can be in the same boat. You can be a high earner, but not have a plan with money, and maybe your net worth isn't all that high, or maybe things are, you're not in the greatest shape financially because maybe you're spending more than you earn, even though your income may be different. And I just found it interesting that those conversations came up. Unfortunately, they didn't seem to go any further than that. And I was trying to poke a little bit with the one person, but they didn't really seem all that interested. So I don't want to twist anybody's arm.
Well, that's it. And with a lot of this stuff, like you can't really force people to like go down the path, you know, like they need to want it. You can't do it for them. And some people just aren't ready. You know, they don't want it. They haven't had that catalyst. They don't see the need and they're just happy and comfortable just following their current pattern. And even if it's not a great pattern, you know, so,
yeah.
And that's fair, right? Like do you, but I think a lot of people too, should really kind of, if they sat down and looked at, you know, what a little organization could do for their personal finances, it's pretty spectacular. Like a little bit of work can go a very long way. For me personally, like the biggest big ticket item is just budgeting and expense tracking. Like just being aware of where your money's coming and going makes a massive difference in your overall money behaviors.
So I started school a little while back and it turns out it was a complete waste of time. So now I'm not doing school anymore.
I disagree, but anyway.
Well, the particular thing that I was doing ended up being a big waste of time. But anyway, point is I've got more free time. So I've decided to put more attention onto the business, but also my own growth in terms of knowledge and in investing and money and everything like that. So I started reading some books that I had gotten away a little while back that I had started. I sort of put down, didn't really continue. So The Millionaire Next Door is one that I'm chewing through right now. And it's hilarious. I'm like reading the book as I'm reading it in my chair, and I'm constantly nodding like the whole time, almost every like paragraph. I'm like, yes, yes. And one of the things, and don't quote me, I was trying to find it, but we have really bad reception in here because I wrote it down in my on my phone, was a quote from the book. Basically, it was saying that small expenses, frequent small expenses add up over time, but also frequent small investments add up over time. Yes. It didn't write it out exactly like that, but that's a summary of what it said. And I was like, I'm nodding my ass off. But when I was reading, I was like, yeah, absolutely. And I've experienced both sides of that, you know, like from our time when we were in debt to like, you know, YOLOing through life, you know, and then now, you know, throwing all these little chunks into the stock market and seeing my dividend payments growing and some of my capital gains growing and stuff like that too. It's been kind of cool. But it leads me to think too about how I'm still hearing a lot, and obviously it's pretty common and people live this way, that people just don't plan and they just live and they just buy whatever they want and they go through life just with their head in the sand a little bit. And I don't know. Like, obviously I've had my experiences and my eye opening moment, and I don't want to ever live like that again, but, I don't know. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. It's people not spending intentionally. And I think the easiest cure to that is like, people need to just sit down, whether it's the husband, wife, you know, the spouses, whoever, like the partnership, and basically plot out what your goals are. Like, what is your future? What is important to you financially speaking? Like, what do you envision that life looking like? Whether it's retirement goals or like you want to buy a house, whatever that thing is that you're aiming towards financially. And then you just got to basically narrow in all of your spending and ask yourself, like, is it necessary and does it push me closer to that goal? Right. And if the answer is no, it doesn't push you closer to that goal, then consider cutting it or reducing the expense. Because a lot of people buy a lot of stuff that's just like, in the big picture, it's just irrelevant. It makes no sense. Like, people buy, you know, the $200 pair of shoes. It's like, okay, cool. But like, is that going to help you towards your goal of early retirement or whatever that thing is that's important to you? And the answer is usually no. And not enough people do that. They don't think about it at all. They don't talk about it at all. And that's just society. Like, that's just how this whole system is built and how we're educated and how we think. And it's really disadvantageous. Like, the people who do think that way, who do intentionally spend and have like a rational plan, they end up further ahead, just because they're being smart with their decisions, right?
Yeah, it's like that saying goes, right? Failing to plan is planning to fail, right?
Yep.
Why, I lost my train of thought.
Well, we just came out here to do our podcast, and we're actually at our parents' place right now. We do our Sunday family dinners. And it was kind of interesting. We were going over our parents' retirement numbers and doing some stuff there. It's sort of funny. I'm encouraged. They're actually in a really good spot. But, like, we didn't know that until just, like, super recently, because it just wasn't really a conversation that came up. And they made a lot of really good moves, but I'm not sure how intentional those moves were, some of them. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like they had a decent sense of like, okay, we should be doing this and we should not be doing this. And it really worked out for them. But I feel like some of it was like, I wouldn't say luck, but not as intentional as it could have been, I guess, you know. And there was a lot of numbers that they didn't seem to know or understand. So I don't know. I'm not even sure where I'm going with this. I just think it was kind of interesting to see that, like, you know, our parents, especially our mom, she's like a money person and she's smart and she does a lot of this really, really good moves with money. She's taught us a lot of stuff about money as well. Sometimes we didn't receive the message, but she certainly tried. And then here we're like looking through their finances, and there was like a lot of unknowns there that's like, well, this is pretty easy to figure out, actually, if you just sit down and devote the time to it. I think that kind of lumps into like being intentional and having a plan and just thinking about it more, you know. And all that said, like, this was a super encouraging sit down, and kind of something that stressed me out, it probably stressed you out, was like worrying about our parents' retirement and like how they're going to be. And just having that openness of sitting down, looking at the specific numbers and talking about it. Now I'm going home tonight, like, wow, I do not have to worry about my parents. They're fine.
Yeah, for sure. And I think part of that process that they've gone through was a consequence of mom's profession, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she probably heard all the financial, and I'm doing quotations with my hands, financial experts that she's worked with saying that you should do an RRSP, you should do an RE, you know, all these sort of things that they said that they should be doing. So mom just went with it. Now I'm sure she had obviously she has an understanding of some of the concepts of them.
For
you know,
sure she
she's throwing out the terminology of, like, you know, the RRSP to a RIF and all this different stuff. So obviously
she understands many of these things better than you or I.
Like, but I think they just wanted to set it and forget it. I think that was part of it. It was just like, okay, we're going to throw money into this and we're not going to worry about it until retirement, kind of thing. And I mean, you know, obviously not a bad plan. They were fine.
And that's kind of the funny thing. Like, oh, we don't want to worry about it. We want to set it and forget it. And like, we just saw the numbers today. It worked out for them. So, you know, a consistent long-term plan doesn't have to be complicated and it can still be effective. And we just, like, that was proof, right?
Yeah.
And that was like the ultimate, well, pretty ultimate set it and forget it strategy, and it worked out quite well. And me looking at it, I'm thinking, like, that's not how I would do it or how I am doing it, and I think there's more efficient ways. But sometimes it's not even about, like, is this the most efficient way or is this other way the most efficient way. Sometimes it's just do something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sabrina and I were talking about this on the drive over about, you know, if you're a high earner or a low earner, like, what's better, a TFSA or an RRSP? And I told her my thoughts have changed on this. I used to be like, well, if you have a large income, you should probably go with a TFSA, especially if you have a pension. And now I don't differentiate. For me, it's like RRSP or TFSA. My answer is yes. Like, just do something. Like, they both have their pros and cons. And I'm sure you could break down a very specific numbers for a specific case and come up with, like, yeah, for sure, option A is better than option B. But, like, I don't even care about that anymore. Just do something. People just need to execute, you know? You go down one route or the other, one might be slightly more efficient, but who cares? As long as you have a good plan, you stick it through, you're going to be just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of planning, I have a buddy of mine who I've always known to be a decent earner, but also a decent spender, you know, has a lot of, random... he has a disposable income, like, nothing super, like, no mortgage, nothing like that. And he always spent a lot of his money on some dumb things. And recently I sort of noticed a little bit of shift. He's talking about wanting to buy a house, and we were trying to convince him to buy something, to basically buy a video game to play with us. And he was like, no, I'm saving money for this thing. So, it ties into what we were saying about with people who do spend all their money. Like, there's a lot of factors with that, right? Like, not only are you up against, education fails us, right? As mm-hmm. we talked about before, they don't teach us really about much of this stuff.
No, not effectively anyways.
And then you've got the advertisers and the companies trying to shove everything down our throats all the time.
And they're good at it.
And then those who are hooked on that, right, or in that, peer pressure others.
Peer pressure,
so,
big one.
So in my example here, my buddy's saying, no, I'm trying to save money and this video game costs like $50. And I had another buddy saying, well, it's $50. Who cares? But the guy's got a goal in mind, right? He wants to save for a mortgage. So it might only be $50, but $50 10 times.
And this is full circle, being intentional with your spending. Does that $50 video game bring him closer to his goal of buying the house? The answer is no, absolutely not. It doesn't. So there's a guy choosing the thing that's going to push him closer to his goal. So, like, kudos to that guy. And that's not to say, like, you could never spend any money on yourself. But just be intentional with it. Like, weigh your options. Like, maybe he had $50 of disposable income and he was like, you know what? I would rather go to dinner. I don't know, whatever. But maybe he did evaluate where his disposable income should go and he chose it wasn't the video game. And he knew not to do, like, whatever he chose and also the video game. You know what I mean? Like, you got to draw the line somewhere. So, like, we're not saying don't ever spend money on fun stuff. You have to. Otherwise, you're going to snap and this isn't going to work out for you. So anyways, that's, you know, good for that guy.
What's that in the scene in The Shining there? All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy or something. What's the line? I can't remember, but he goes crazy in the hotel. That's a good old movie.
Yeah. Yes. Is there anything else you want to say on that topic?
Not necessarily. I was thinking about shifting it over to banks.
Well, this is it. And there's a bit of a segue here. So talking about being intentional with your spending, I've ranted about this before. But one thing I think people don't often do is banks are not something we think about a whole lot here in Canada. We're kind of limited by our options, but that's opening up. Like there's new technologies coming, there's new startups, companies coming in offering more exciting options. So gone are the days where you just go to RBC, TD, BMO, CIBC, or Scotiabank and just like go there because that's where your parents went and just stick that out for your entire life and pay fees. There's more exciting options that are out there now. And I don't know if a lot of people are really realizing it, but people sort of in our circles, because we don't shut up about it, are starting to realize that. And we're all switching, going to better banks that don't charge fees and better banks that actually pay you a bit of money to park your cash there. And I think that's something that people need to think about more and don't. So in our experience, like I don't know exactly how your banking experience started, I guess, but I was an RBC. Were you an RBC client growing up?
No, so I have never paid bank fees in my life.
Ever?
Ever.
What was your first bank?
PC Financial.
That was your first bank.
Mom told me to get a bank account at PC Financial because it was a no-fee banking option and it was an adjunct of CIBC, and that's how I started.
Mom for the win.
Mom for the win, yeah, which is why I'm surprised that you never got onto that.
You know what happened to me was Mom set me up with RBC. So our mom used to work for RBC way back. Mom set me up with RBC with a student account, which was free. It's free until a certain age when you're no longer a student.
Gotcha.
And then it was actually nice too, because the way we paid for my college, I worked like part-time jobs or whatever, and I saved some money for college. Not much. So Mom and Dad paid for a huge chunk of my college, but I had a few bucks as well. So Mom turned that student free account into a joint account so that we can shuttle money in and out to help me through school. Now it was a combination of, like, Mom didn't really push me and I was too young and stupid to really care. But when I finished college, now all of a sudden I was paying like, I think it was like $15.99 a month in bank fees for that account. And I paid this for years. And like, I saw it, I saw the money coming out and I was just like, oh, well, whatever. It's just $15.99, whatever. Like I didn't care. Right. I was, you know, 20, whatever, how old I was. But that's just wild. Like I think paying fees to a bank is like the stupidest thing. Yeah. It makes me so mad. And we were talking about that today with our dad as well. He hates banks as well for that reason. They nickel and dime you. They charge fees for everything, and the services they provide for those fees, like, it doesn't even make sense, because banks actually make money on your deposits. Like, they take the money that you put in their accounts and they lend it out, and they'll make like 8, 9, 10% on it sometimes. And they'll pay you like 0.1% interest, which is nothing, and then also charge you a fee. So they basically pay you nothing. They get money from you, and they also make money by lending your money out. So the whole concept of bank fees just drives me up the wall. Absolutely insanity.
I remember having this conversation with Mel, because she was a TD client all the time. And now there's a lot to unpack there because of the whole like situation that we were in. She was hiding some debt from me and stuff, so there was some things tied to TD with that. But they treated her like shit is basically the short story.
They all do.
And they're charging her, I forget what it was, $15 a month or somewhere around the ballpark of $20 a month. And then when we got on the subject of getting our finances sorted out and us getting on the same page, we put everything in our budget. And that was one of the lines. And I was like, why are you paying this fee? You know? And I said, I wasn't giving her shit. I was just saying, like, what value does this add to your life? Is it worth the money they're charging you?
Yeah.
So then we went through and she was like, well, they give me unlimited checking withdrawals.
Yeah, everyone should.
I'm like, okay. I'm like, at the time I was with the PC switch to Simply. So I'm like, well, Simply does that for me and I don't pay a fee. So anyway, basically everything she threw out, which was like three things, which was stupid, didn't make any sense. And I was like, okay, like we got to change this. Like you're spending $240 a year or more for what? You know, something that you can get for free somewhere else, you know?
And a lot of people don't change. Like it's interesting, you know, most people find their way into a bank account because that's what their parents had. Like that's usually the rationale. It's just like, well, it's whatever. I was just sort of ushered into this, never really asked any questions. And then a lot of people don't switch because they set up all this like direct deposit, direct billing. You know, there's all kinds of money moving in and out of this account and it's all automated. So people don't switch because it's a lot of effort to make that switch. Now, I went through this somewhat recently, a couple of years ago. I switched out of my RBC account because I had enough of those fees and I was becoming smarter and I kind of recognized, you know, all the stuff that I just told you about that makes me mad. So when I sat down and broke down the numbers, the amount of interest they paid me was essentially zero. It was basically nothing. They charged me, I think it was $15.99 per month. So I did the annual total of that. So it was, you know, a couple $100 that they took from me per year in fees. And then I looked at a competitor bank that I wanted to switch to who paid a significant amount of interest. And I had a lot of cash in that account. So the difference between being with RBC and paying fees, and then the difference, you know, from that to going to EQ Bank and making a bunch of money in interest was like, oh, I forget what it was. It was well over $1,000 a year. So then you think about that, the amount of effort it takes me to switch the direct deposit, the direct building. It's like, honestly, if I sit down and plot this out, is it like an hour worth of work? Maybe if that, an hour worth of work could make over well over $1,000 difference. And when I say well over, like, I think it was like $1,600, but I can't remember off the top of my head. I'd have to look at my records. So is an hour of work worth, like, honestly, 10 hours of work would have been worth that much money, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a little annoying, sure, but think of it that way. Like, you can, like, how much money per hour am I making by making this decision, you know?
Yeah. So we were with Simply before. We had our emergency fund parked in our high interest savings account with Simply, and I was always under the impression, because of how many times they push notified me with their app, that they're giving us 4.75% interest. But the caveat to that promotion, if you read the fine print, which I did,
fine print,
was it was only between like a three month period or so, and it was on new deposits only. So the money you already had sitting in there wasn't counting for that accumulation of the interest.
Yeah.
So we would get our monthly or quarterly interest payment. I think they pay quarterly. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Let's say it's monthly because it was such a small amount. We would get like pennies, like literally 10 cents, 15 cents interest payment. And we're like, oh, okay. And so then, you know, we've switched to EQ now, EQ Bank. We've put our emergency fund there, and it was not a huge amount. Like, we've got just a little over $10,000 we moved over. And with their cash card that we use, so we get 0.5% cash back and 2.5% interest with EQ Bank, we're getting like $25+ a month. Like, it's between $25 and $30 a month.
Yeah, and no fees on anything.
For no fees, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I use it all the time, like any excuse I have. So then Mel went to the grocery store or something and used the Simply debit card. And I gave her shit because I'm like, they don't give us anything. Why are you using the debit card? I'm like, we got to use our cash back card or something, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so Sabrina and I are both with EQ. I recently moved most of my cash savings. I was with EQ because they were paying 2.5%. They still are, I think. So I probably sat all my cash there for about a year. And I recently just moved it to Wealthsimple. They created this cash account. And if you have a certain net worth, they'll give you 4% on your cash deposits.
Net worth? I thought it was a certain amount of cash.
It doesn't have to be cash. It can be investments.
Oh, okay.
And just across all their platforms, if you've got a certain amount of money across all of their accounts, then they'll give you that 4% on your cash.
That's even better than I thought.
Yeah. So I moved all, pretty much all of my, like, we'll say my emergency fund from EQ Bank to Wealthsimple to get 4% a month now. So yeah, I'm not sure how long that'll last. And there's a good chance eventually they'll probably reduce that rate and I might move the money back to EQ, but it's a pretty sweet deal. But my point is, like, these are the things people should be weighing. These are the options that people should be looking into. You're making like $20-25 a month. Like, a lot of people don't even know that's an option or don't care for that to be an option. But, you know, every $25 a month, every 4 months, you're making $100. That's $300 a year and zero fees. So add that back into what you're earning.
Yeah, and then no caveat saying not on new deposits. So that $25 is making 2.5%.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then, like, you look at the person who's paying $10 a month in bank fees, you know, they're paying $120 a year in fees while you're making, like, we'll say like $300 a year, right? Mm-hmm. So if that person moved to EQ Bank and had a similar amount of money as you, then they would be up $400 on the year for that simple change. Like, it's, people need to consider these little things add up.
And for any of those that are like, oh, well, you know, the big banks are more protected. Like, EQ Bank's got the CIBC insurance.
Yep.
Like, they're all good
insured.
To go.
You're up to 100 grand, just like any other bank is insured. Yeah.
Yep.
So there's not really any difference there. Like,
yep.
Unless you have like well above 100 grand in the account, then maybe it's something to consider. But most people don't just have 100 grand cash that they're sitting in an account, right?
And then if we consider on the investment side of banks, just to touch on that quickly, like just to touch on EQ Bank quickly, their stock price and their dividend payout has gone up significantly in the last, well, since I started banking with them that I've noticed that I've been also investing with them. So it's popular. Like, people are depositing a lot of money. Their books are showing that, right? So.
Yeah, I follow EQ Bank. They're one of my favorite investments. But funny enough, if we're talking on the investment side, as much as I love EQ Bank as a company, they're like, you know, 100% superior to all the major banks, in my opinion. On the investment side, I have more investments with the other big Canadian banks than I do with EQ Bank. I have a significant investment in EQ Bank, but for those reasons that I mentioned earlier, like the big five banks, you know, you could argue big six banks, the traditional big Canadian banks. Think about what we said earlier, where people mostly just sign up to these banks because that's what their parents did. So that's what they do. And that's what their kids are going to do, because they're going to open up a bank account for their kids at these banks. So it's a very sticky business for that reason. And then also the difficulty switching that I mentioned, that also plays into how good these businesses are. Like, these businesses make money hand over fist. It is absolutely incredible how much money these traditional big five, big six banks make. And they've been around since like the early to mid 1800s doing this. Like, they're fantastic businesses, regardless of my opinion of the actual like experience for the customer. And a prime example of this is like Scotiabank. Like, I hate Scotiabank. I won't invest in it. It's the only big bank that I haven't invested in directly. That's how much I hate them. But they make cash like you wouldn't believe. But I have a principal thing. I've had a war with them, and they're just a garbage company. But it's a thing that sort of worries me. Like, I'm investing heavily in all the big banks right now, especially because there's been a bit of a pullback in recent months because of all the American crap and the bankruptcies and the failing banks. And it's been dragging the Canadian banks down too, which is unreasonable, I think. We're much more secure banks up here.
So can I backfill that just
sure,
a little bit?
Sure, yeah.
So for those who don't know, and then we're talking about like the stock market stuff right now, the U.S. banking system runs very, very differently than the Canadian banking system does. But what's happened in the last couple of months is three big banks.
I think they're up to six now.
Really?
I did not know that. First Horizon, I think was the name.
So it's still going on.
Oh, yeah. Another one just collapsed like a few days ago.
Okay. So anyway, there's a small banking collapse going on in the United States right now. There's a couple of banks that have folded, literally gone bankrupt. Because of just poor decisions
risky investments.
Yeah, I'll just chalk it up to poor decisions, but whatever these specifics are. But what happens a lot of times is the stock market, in my experience, seems to be people that invest, a lot of people can be quite emotional. And, you know, maybe some strategies, I don't know. But anyway, there's often when news happens, there's the prices go up or go down. In this case, it's bad news. So the prices of basically the banking sector in general just seems to be going down.
Yeah, so, things move in unison, right? Like, you can have one like significant failure in one bank and it'll drag like another 100 banks down with it in terms of stock price. Like,
yeah.
That's just how it goes.
So on the consumer side, I've heard people, because of this news, saying they're pulling all their money out of the banks. So like even Canadians. They're taking all their cash out and hiding it because they're afraid the bank's gonna fail. And then on the investment side, I've seen people sell off their positions because they think that whatever their fear is. Now, if we've talked about this on social media, but we can talk about it a little bit here. The Canadian banks are totally fine.
But I would expect so. Now, I'm reading a really interesting book right now. It's called The Black Swan, not based on the movie. But basically the whole concept is like the impact of the like unknowable and the highly improbable. So like, we're saying Canadian banks are very sturdy and very strong, and they are. But like, what if let's say RBC, what if RBC collapsed tomorrow? For like, nobody saw it coming, it collapsed. That would create a devastating chain reaction. And like, guys like Jordan and I I wouldn't say we'd be screwed, but we would get hurt by that. Like, we have a lot invested in those.
Not RBC. I'm good.
but think about the fallout if RBC collapsed.
Right.
Like, all the big banks would eat it, right? Even the small banks would eat it twice as much, probably. So it's like, I don't blame people for like sheltering and protecting themselves, and I try to be cautious about blanket statements like Canadian banks are safe. I think it's accurate to say Canadian banks are safer by a long shot than the American banks, because we just have much more secure regulation. And there's things you can do to offset this risk, like educate yourself on what these banks do to offset risk and why they're safer. But you do have to be careful, because sometimes crazy stuff happens that you never see coming. Like, flashback 5 years ago, if if I walked up to you and said, like, yo, this sickness is going to come around in a couple of years and it's going to shut down the entire planet and, like, you're going to be locked up and you won't be able to find toilet paper, you'd tell me, like, no, you're stupid. That's very unlikely to happen. I think you're completely wrong on that. But then it does happen. You know what I mean? Like, it's super improbable and unlikely until it does happen. And these things happen all the time. So it's anyways, now we're going to get down this philosophical rabbit hole, but something to consider.
But to, like, ease our fears on the banks is that, like, you know, we have the banks are insured, investments are insured. There's these stop gates basically for problems that may arise. So, you know, like you said, likely safe and things are pretty fine.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is the government actually regulates our banks and they mandate them to actually have a certain percentage of let's, to keep it very simple, a percentage of money set aside in case things go south, right? In case, like, there's a run on the banks, many banks are collapsing, whatever. So, and you can see this directly in their balance sheets. Like, you look at their earnings and you'll see them, like CIBC, I was looking at not too long ago, and they had, like, their quarterly earnings, they put aside, like, I think it was 400 million or some crazy amount, and they call it provisions for credit losses. And what that is they report it as a loss, but all it is they take that 400 million and they put it aside just in case. And they do this every quarter, and, like, their total provisions are in the billions of dollars. Right. And that's strictly for, like, if and when things go down, they'll have a big slush fund to prop themselves up so that the government doesn't have to bail them out, hopefully. So that's why we have such a margin of safety. And I have an article somewhere. I'd have to go digging through it. But anyways, I broke down why I like Canadian bank stocks. And there was a really neat stat that I found that I put in that article. And it was, like, in 2008, there was the banking crisis in America, right, where, like, all these banks collapsed. And as the fallout from that, there was something like 2,000 American banks from then till, like, a decade later had collapsed. 2,000, that seems extreme. It was a huge number anyways. Like, many, many hundreds, if not thousands of banks in America collapsed. And then over that same time period, you want to guess how many Canadian banks collapsed? Zero, not a single one, because we have much more stringent regulation, which is big part of what gives me confidence in our banks and the fact that they've been alive and running. The major ones have been alive and running since, like, the 1800s, never missed a dividend. Like, they're very, very solid businesses.
Yeah. So as an investor, I had started investing in, I put a position in CIBC. I bought, a few years ago. Or maybe it was last year. They're one of my newer ones. I thought they were at a pretty decent price. And so I bought some shares. I liked their dividend. I can't remember why they dipped. There was some problem and the price had gone down. Anyway, I'm adding more to my position with CIBC because I like that bank. But what I'm trying to get at is I always had an eye on TD. And historically, TD has always been either the top earner or in the top two or top three.
Yeah,
of the five
pretty solid
in now. The last, like, 50 years. And I had watched a few guys sort of break that down. But TD was always trading really high. I think they're in, like, $100 share range or a little bit higher than that. And I thought, well, I can't pay that. But I had always thought, like, should I buy anyway? Because are they ever going to go down? And yeah, I always have that thought sometimes with companies. I'm always like, you know, because ones I've been watching that have been doing that is Alimentation Couche-Tard.
Yeah, they like don't dip.
Dollarama has been doing that too since I've been watching them, in Canadian Tire. Those are just a few to name that I know specifically. Canadian Tire, when I was looking at them, they're $100. They're at like $300 now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. So anyway, like, I'm not going to start, I don't know, but I mean, whatever. But TD was one of those that I was looking at. And then all of a sudden this banking thing is happening in the States and TD's pulled back. They hit $78 at one point. And I picked up a few shares at 83 or 84, and they're sitting at about 82 right now. So I'd like to add more there.
So TD is an interesting one because they've been hit hard because they have huge American banking exposure. They've expanded heavily into America, and currently America's banking system is not doing so hot. So if people know that TD is pretty heavily positioned there, so it's affecting their stock price. And also TD's in the process of acquiring one of these, you know, troubled U.S. banks, a significant sized U.S. bank. They're in the process. They put in a bid and it's like a many, many billion dollar bid. And they put in the offer price and that bank has collapsed in value since then. So people are like worried about that. It's like, well, TD is going to vastly overpay for this bank. Now the deal hasn't closed, so we'll see how that shakes out. But these are some of the concerns people have. But where the people have concerns, like, yeah, and they're warranted. Like, there's risk for sure. But often it's the people, like, these are often the opportunities to get ahead. Nothing's guaranteed. I'm not telling you that this is for sure, like, buy TD and you'll do fine. I don't know that. Nobody does. But with great risk can come great reward, right? It could go either way. But this, to me, it seems like it may be the beginning of an opportunity. Now, I personally have not pulled the trigger on a whole lot of TD recently. I have some from before. But I'm watching it closely and I'm considering buying in. And what I would like to see for me, one of the signals is how are they going to handle this acquisition of this bank that's, you know, they're basically on the verge of overpaying for. I want an update on that. I want to see, are they going to cancel the deal? What are the implications of that? What are the, you know, can they, or are they going to go through with it? And do they have a plan for, like, why? Like, does it make sense to go through with it despite overpaying? The other thing I want to see too is their most recent earnings, like the next, I think you found the data in like a month. Yeah. I want to see those earnings as well. Because what happens with banks is they actually have to report like book losses. So let's say the bank made like $1 billion in the quarter, but they had a bunch of investments that are down and the investments are down 200 million. Well, then they have to report of earnings of 800 million. They subtract those paper losses. So the thing is with those investments, although they're down and they report it as a loss, they haven't sold those investments. So if they just wait, they might go back up and it's not actually a loss at all, but they're forced to report it that way. So because TD has huge investments in the States, I'm kind of wondering if, you know, they're going to report a really, really poor earnings because all the banks are down. Maybe they might have huge paper losses that they didn't sell. It's not real losses. It just appears that way. And that might spook rookie investors out and everyone will sell and collapse the stock price. And then I'll look at it. And if I don't see anything to worry about it, for me, that might be the opportunity to buy in a little bit. So we'll see how it shakes out. And there's a lot more to look at than that, but that's sort of where my head's at with TD.
Yeah, and that gives me some confidence. I mean, not that I wasn't confident before, but I'm glad we're having this conversation. I had someone post on Blossom the other day, why invest in TD? And this is someone that I've historically seen put out company valuations that I know is quite intelligent. They weren't coming at it from a beginner perspective. So I threw out my comment in there and I was saying, well, I'm like, because TD's been the top performer in the last, you know, 50 years. They pay a nice dividend. Their earnings are always good. I forget what the other ones that I had said were, but I had thrown out some good points about them, you know, why I'm confident investing in them in the 80s, $80 range for their stock price. So I like that you're throwing in your perspective here because there's things for me to consider too. Not that I'm dropping my life savings into TD, but I opened up a decent sized position for my portfolio. And I, like I said, always wanted them and I'm happy to ride the wave and dollar cost average down if I can and collect the dividend while it all goes down.
And that dividend is another thing too. Like, I'm not sure what TD's dividend yield is right now. I would guess 5%. That's incredibly good for such a stable, reliable dividend. You're going to get 5% to just sit on this investment and just wait and see what happens. Like, even if it goes down, who cares? You're not going to sell it. This thing's been around since 1830 or whatever, never missed a dividend. And in all likelihood, it's going to be here in the year 2100, you know? So it's like, I don't see a lot of risk probably, other than these like crazy outlier events. You never know, but I don't see a lot of risk in sitting on these investments. So like, let's say I see TD posts a bad earnings and I'm like, oh, okay, that doesn't look good. Stock dropped. I'll buy in. Then I buy in and it continues to drop, like, cool, whatever. As long as it's not like a catastrophic earnings, which I doubt it will be, like, I'm sure it will bounce back in the next 20 years at some point, you know what I mean? So I don't see a lot of risk necessarily in buying in and just waiting and collecting the dividend while I wait. Nobody knows for sure, but I personally am not crazy worried. And this idea of the banks, and a lot of the banks right now, the Canadian banks are beat down a little bit. And you can find some high quality banks like CIBC.
You know what their dividend yield is right now?
CIBC is like 6%.
6%, yeah.
BMO is up there like 5-ish, I think.
And TD's up there. To put this into perspective for people who don't know, like I only 2 year investing timeline right now. 2 years ago when I was looking at banks, they were all around 2-3%
yeah,
dividend
yeah,
yield.
Yeah, exactly.
2 years ago.
Yeah. So I recently, like a few months ago, we talked about this a little bit. We both owned Chartwell retirement home stock. I owned a very small position, a couple hundred bucks or whatever.
Owned? Did you sell?
Yeah, so I had, well, hear me out. I had a couple $100 in this position, and I bought it as part of this master plan of spreading a bunch of money out to get this, like, this dividend yield. This is a whole master plan, but I didn't do a lot of research on all of these companies because there were so many. And I was basically building my own ETF, just mirroring another ETF, and Chartwell was in there. So then I started, you know, over the months, I would research these companies, you know, one a week or something like that. And I came across Chartwell and I absolutely hated what I saw.
Yeah.
And my whole rationale for, it was a very small position for me, but my whole rationale for owning Chartwell was like, it was included in this ETF that I was mirroring, which was a pretty decent performing ETF. And Chartwell had a high dividend yield, which would bump up the dividend yield of my entire portfolio. Well, when I looked at the earnings, it was like bleeding money hand over fist. There's a lot of debt, a lot of declining money, which made me very sad, right? Like, that's not a good thing to see. Like, I did not like the financials. And I looked and the yield was like 6-point-something%. And I thought I could buy this like super high risk, declining revenue, like bankrupt company. It's not bankrupt, but my point is just it wasn't a solid company. I could buy that and risk it to get that 6% dividend yield. Or I could buy a company like CIBC and get the exact same dividend yield. But I just thought about this. I'm like, I'm way more comfortable owning CIBC than I am Chartwell. So miraculously, from the time I bought Chartwell, and keep in mind, it was only a couple $100, I was up like 20% or something crazy like that. So I sold half the position and put it into CIBC. I kept half the position in case I was wrong and it shot to the moon or whatever. But I think I'm down to like a $200 position. Like, I really don't care what happens to it. And since then, it actually did decline a whole bunch, but I think I'm still up on the position, but it's small enough. I don't even really watch it. I don't really care.
Yeah. Chart rolls down for sure.
And I'm not saying they're never going to bounce back. I don't know, but it's just, I was more comfortable holding CIBC than I was Chartwell. That's
sure.
all.
But on the subject of Chartwell, their last quarterly report wasn't too bad. It wasn't great, but it wasn't too bad. But we'll see.
Yeah, I think I had a peek at it. There were some metrics, I think, that were improving, but there was still some sketchiness there, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't spend much time on it. I think I just looked at it because you said it was better, and I was like, oh. But, yeah. One company that I've been buying a fair amount, well, two companies, actually. I buy CPX, Capital Power Corporation. It's like a utilities company, and I've been buying POW, Power Corporation of Canada.
I love POW.
Yeah, I've been buying those more and more. They actually pay good, pretty good dividends, and have been actually performing quite well in my portfolio. Those are the ones to watch. CPX has earnings tomorrow. I'm excited to look into that.
Nice. Yeah, I don't want to add any more to my POW position because I'm up quite a bit and I don't like to average up, but I don't know, we'll see.
So POW is interesting. I don't know if our listeners will really enjoy this type of talk, so maybe we'll keep it brief. But POW is interesting because what they are is Power Corporation of Canada. They're like, to put it simply,
can I tell you something quickly?
Yes.
So I stumbled on POW thinking they were a utility company when I first was looking at it. Yeah.
Did you get it mixed up with CPX?
No, I didn't get it mixed up. I forget how I came across it, but it was in my renewables and energy tab in my stocks to watch. And when I actually started looking into the company, I was like, oh, this isn't a utility company. So anyway, go on.
One of my biggest draws actually to POW. So let me back up. They're a complicated company, but to keep it simple for absolute beginners here, they're basically like an investment company. They invest in all kinds of private and some public companies as well. And then based on the performance of those investments and the dividends and all this stuff, they get income. And then they distribute that income to shareholders like myself and Jordan in the form of dividends. And it's a little more complicated than that, but at face value, that's kind of the base level of how they do business. And what originally drew me to them was they have a significant stake in Wealthsimple, which is a private company. We love Wealthsimple. That's what we invest in. It's the only, as far as I know, the only no-fee stockbroker website that Canada has. There might be others now, but I'm not aware of any. And they're a pretty good platform. They do some good stuff. So I wanted a piece of that, but they're a private company. So I kind of indirectly get a piece of that through Power Corporation of Canada. But what's interesting about Power Corporation of Canada is they have a significant stake in Manulife or Great West Life. So if you were invested heavily in Great West Life and then also heavily in Power Corporation of Canada, you're now putting a lot of your eggs in one basket. And a lot of people don't know that. So I like Great West Life, but I have a small position then because I have a decent position in Power Corporation. Both great companies. I like them both. But so yeah, if you ever looked at my portfolio, like, oh, you don't like Great West Life because I only have like $100 in it. Well, it's because I'm indirectly invested in them through Power Corporation. Yeah.
Yeah, and they got a pretty good dividend yield too. I think they're what, hovering 6%?
Yeah, I think both of them are like 5-6% range.
Great West Life is for sure, yeah.
Which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't want to dive too much down the specific stocks because I feel like we're probably going to lose a significant number of our listeners there. I think we should do like a separate episode so people actually know what they're getting into. If they see the title like specific stock talk, they'll be like, ah, I don't want that. We're getting up on the 50-minute mark here. Do you want to cover some other stuff or do you think we should start winding it down?
I think winding it down is good. We hit the banks and yeah, we're just we're just getting into some other stuff there that we can save for other episodes for those who do want to get into the specifics, because we could totally dedicate a whole episode on, like, we could probably even do like our own portfolio breakdown episodes, which
yeah, another thing I think would be fun too is to talk about some of the individual stocks we own and like break down at a very basic level what the business is, because I think a lot of our audience is beginners for the most part. And if I talked about smart centers, like, they might not understand the scope of what smart centers are. If I say RioCan, like, well, I don't really know what RioCan is. Or if I, you know, just talk about how these businesses generate money. And like, we were talking about Canadian Tire the other day, and they own a bunch of businesses that I occasionally frequent. I didn't even know they were owned by them. I actually think, I don't know, but I think they own Party City, is that what it's called? Party City?
Yeah,
it was in there, and they asked for my Triangle Rewards card. And I'm like, what?
And then Triangle Rewards card is their, like, obviously it's theirs as well, but they make money off that too because there's a credit card attached to that.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yep. Yeah.
Anyways, there's a lot of really neat stuff to discover, and maybe that'll be one of our episodes we do, is break down sort of how these businesses work and sort of the diversity of them, because it's pretty interesting.
You know what I do want to throw out there, though?
What?
So, going down the rabbit hole of me reading and doing some more learning and stuff, something I like doing is listening to podcasts now instead of just music on Spotify, and I use Spotify. What I found was there was a few books on my list that I wanted to read by Peter Lynch. He's one of my favorite guys,
great.
Talks about investing and stuff. There's actually two free audiobooks on Spotify. The one's included with Spotify, or maybe it's in the free version as well. I don't know, but I have the paid version. Learn to Earn by Peter Lynch and One Up on Wall Street. They're both on Spotify, and they're actually read by Peter Lynch. And what I found interesting by that is that Peter Lynch is Bostonian, and he's got a pretty thick accent. So, you know, I don't mean to insult the guy, but he doesn't sound like the smartest guy, but he is. But like, listening to him is like, it's relatable, but also because of what he talks about is very relatable too,
yeah.
Because his whole point in these two books is that the average Joe can and should invest. And
yeah.
He talks about different strategies too, but he makes it like super simple and basically saying that, like, you know, everyone should do it because you're kind of leaving free money on the table.
Absolutely.
And I really enjoyed those books. So you guys heard that of the audio books, because it's good. It was fun. So check that out.
Isn't it funny? So yeah, he's one of these guys. He's a big index fund guy, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he is, like, so he's got like, his talks have been 50-50. He says, if you don't want to do any research and you just want to set it and forget it, indexes is the way to go. But he also says that, because he's the one that says that, you know, you won't be able to beat the market, or it's very hard to beat the market. So you want to try and get the averages, right? That 8% or whatever. It's a little bit skewed a bit because the books were written in like the 80s. And so when he talks and uses some certain references or certain companies, even like they're a little old school, but it's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah. But I find it very funny. So you got all these like legendary investors, and they basically tell the masses like their best advice for the average person is just to buy index funds, buy a little bit of everything. And we've come across a few people, someone Blossom, who are like, they say that like it's a bad thing, like, oh, you won't even beat the average, you won't beat the index by doing that. And I find that to be like so hilarious. Like, okay, but why do you want to beat the index? Like, there's stats that show like 85-90% of people will never beat just the person who just buys a little bit of every stock. Like close to 90% of people will not beat that. So then you got Joe Blow telling you that index investing is a bad idea because at best you're only going to get average returns. It's like, okay, but by saying that, you're saying that you think that you're the next Warren Buffett and you're one of the outlying like 10% or less that's going to beat that. And like, how much do you really think you're going to beat it by? So think about how much risk you're taking on trying to beat this, you know, it's just the risk reward isn't there. And I could model it for you in like 10 minutes about how all you need is the average to become a millionaire. Time is your best friend. Like,
yeah.
You just extend those average returns back over a long enough time and be consistent with it, and you will be a millionaire. Like, there's no doubt in my mind, as long as there's not like some catastrophic war that we lose, like, you will be a millionaire.
Yeah.
And I just find it hilarious when people like shit on that. They're like, oh, you can't beat the averages, you know, like.
And two of my favorite money gurus off the top of my head who sell praise that. Well, three now, like Warren Buffett says that.
Yep.
Peter Lynch, and then even Dave Ramsey. Now that I know, when he talks about mutual funds, he's talking about U.S. mutual funds, which mirror basically ETFs.
Yeah, much lower fees.
He basically says invest the index, and if you do that with a long time horizon, and Peter Lynch specifically says this in his books. He literally says, expand your time horizon. If you're looking at 20, 30, 40 beyond years, and you're averaging your returns, and in his case, in the books, he's talking about anywhere between 8 and 10%.
That's
he's
reasonable.
Like, you're going to be a millionaire. It's like set and forget almost. Like, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's great.
Yeah. All right. We better wrap it up there before we eat up more time. So that'll be it. And then hopefully we will get another episode out in...
Oh, wait. There was one more thing I want to talk about.
Oh, that was close.
I forgot. Okay. So in talking about the index, talking about Blossom, there is somebody on Blossom that made an argument that I thought was quite interesting about investing in the index, or at least the masses investing in the index. So their theory or argument or whatever they were bringing up, the subject was that they thought maybe the stock market was overinflated because a lot of people may be going through this theory of just investing in the index, bringing up the stock market's value sort of artificially.
Yep. Yeah, that's 100% what's happening. And it's also 100% not something to be overly concerned about. For two reasons. One, the stock market has gone through boom and bust cycles many, many times. Look at all the, 2008, massive bust. Okay, it was a big bubble. Everything was doing really well. 2008, everything collapses. Go back a little bit. The internet bubble, the early 2000s, like 2000, 2001, stock market blew up exponentially and then completely collapsed. And we recovered. Like, we always recover. Before that was, 87 or 91? I can't remember. But we have these huge, the Great Depression, but like way before that. You have the stock market runs up ridiculously, and then completely collapses and then runs up again, like over many, many years. So all you have to do is zoom out, extend your time horizon, and invest through the nonsense. When the stuff collapses, that's when you need to throw the most money at it, right? You get yourself a deal, and that will help you bounce back and come out the other side. So there's no doubt about it. The stock market will collapse again someday. Nobody knows when, and anybody who says they know when is an idiot. They're completely lying to you. Nobody knows. So not a big thing to be concerned about. Now, if this person's concerned that like it will collapse so catastrophically that the stock market will no longer exist, well, then we've got a whole other problem. And if you believe that's going to happen, you should sell all your stocks right now, go buy some guns and ammo, because the whole world will collapse if that happens. Like, that will change the entire world's financial system. Like, anarchy will ensue. So I don't think that we'll ever see in our lifetime a collapse that catastrophic where like the stock market ceases to exist. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying I doubt it. But as far as like your typical boom and bust cycles, 100% is going to happen. Just invest through it and try to insulate yourself so that you don't lose your job when it happens, because that would suck.
Yeah, and that's something that Peter Lynch advises for, like saying to invest in regular intervals with a long time horizon, and basically invest the index. And you're not risk-free, but you're reducing your risk for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay, let's shut it down there.
Yep. So don't forget to follow, like, subscribe, all that kind of stuff. We really appreciate it, guys. We're slowly growing, and it's been fun. So let's keep this going. Thank you.
Cool. And as always, we'll post a couple of links to some of the things we talked about in the description. So give it a look. All right. Thanks
Cheers.
For stopping by.